I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Georgia may have had a little earthquake recently, but apparently that's not going to keep Nick Ayers from leaving the Trump administration and a very big job offer to come back home. Meanwhile, Norfolk Southern will soon call Atlanta home. Governor-elect Brian Kemp makes his first major speech without anything exploding behind him a few days after he paid a visit to Atlanta's City Hall. And who would have guessed a couple of years ago that a wildly popular soccer team would be the one to break Atlanta's long championship drought? Just some of what we'll explore on this edition of The Political Breakfast. Thanks for having us with you. I'm Dennis O'Hare, and our regulars are back. Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist and public affairs consultant and former Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Welcome to you both.
Merry Christmas, and welcome back to Theron from his globetrotting ways that have made him miss the last two podcasts.
You know, Brian's just been crying, and I've heard from his wife and several of his friends that he just really has been going through a lot of withdrawal of missing me.
It's not the same.
It's just not the same. So that's his very, Republican way of saying I miss my good Democratic friend.
But thanks to Michael Owens and Kathy Willard for filling in very ably while you were gone, Theron, and welcome back. And we have a little news of our own. Theron, Brian, and I will be in Marietta on January 9th. That's a Wednesday. For another evening edition of The Political Breakfast. It'll be at the Theater in the Square. It'll be a special edition, a preview of what state lawmakers and the new administration will be up to under the Gold Dome in the session that starts January 14th. Now, we'll have a live audience, and it will be ever so much more live if you are there. And you can find out how to get tickets by visiting our website, wabe.org/community. Let's start with the governor-elect in his first speech to a gathering of lawmakers and other policymakers. He took a more conciliatory tone than he did in the campaign. Brian, there were no exploding things behind him. He didn't bring a shotgun with him. But he talked in kind of vague terms about one of the biggest issues of all, which is health care. And that's not going to be so easy once the session starts.
No, and I think he did strike the right tone, though, to his credit, since the election has been saying it's time to put politics behind us. I've got to put together an agenda. I've got to look forward to the next session and begin to address some of these issues that we heard about on the campaign trail. And, of course, Brian Kemp made his margins out in rural Georgia. He had a rural strategy and really ran up the margins there. And some counties in rural Georgia got 85% or more, outperforming Trump in Trump country. That's remarkable. And so to some degree, you got to think he's going to be owing and particularly attentive to the needs of rural Georgia, whether that be rural broadband, but even more pressing than that, rural health care.
Rural hospitals.
And rural hospitals, which continue to close, continue to struggle, continue to downsize and offer fewer and fewer services, which is going to be part of how it is regardless. It's just market economics. But Brian Kemp really does need to focus on those issues and figure out a way to keep access open to people in those areas, because it's not just about having an emergency room if you have a stroke or a heart attack. It's also about economic development, because no big business is going to go to a region where their employees can't get to a doctor.
And you're referring to rural areas, but it's not just rural areas. There are safety net hospitals in Atlanta like Grady, which are facing the same dilemmas.
Yeah, absolutely. And Grady has done a great job in recent years of putting forward waiver plans. They have really been on the cutting edge, and I give them a lot of credit.
And waiver plans, you're talking about in lieu of Medicaid expansion, something that the feds would accept to get more federal money here.
Yeah. You know, one thing that Stacey Abrams did on the campaign trail that was very effective, and I hear old Theron here repeating it a lot, is Georgia's turning down $8 million a day in federal funds by not expanding Medicaid. But we can't expand Medicaid just in the traditional sense because of the political reality for Republicans and the opinions within their own primaries when they have to face electorate in 2 years. So what we can do is create a Georgia-tailored plan that has some conservative elements in it, such as work requirements, time limits, co-payments, that type thing.
But
that,
other states have done this before. Why has this taken so long?
Part of why we're at this juncture,
including Indiana.
And I apologize for Theron for me being on the target so much here, but Governor Deal has not been a believer in Medicaid expansion. And so we do have a turning of the page here and a new opportunity. Governor Deal does not believe that Medicaid was intended to service able-bodied childless adults. And it is an ideological principle for him. And so that has been a roadblock. We'll see if it is similar for Brian Kemp or if he's open to going another way. But somebody's going to have to lead. Somebody's going to have to step up with a plan, and they're going to have to sell it. And then they're going to have to stand there and take the bullets and the arrows when they come and be able to rationally explain to Georgians, and particularly to Republican Georgians, why we need to do this and why it makes good economic sense.
Well, what's very interesting is that, you know, if you look at this speech that Governor-elect Kemp gave at the biennial, it was exactly what you just described, Dennis. It was a softer Brian Kemp. Many of us have known him for over 20 years, and knowing that the polarization that we saw during the Republican primary, that sort of continued over to the general election, is what he said best. Look, the campaign is over. That's basically what he did to get elected. Now the governor-elect is focusing on governing. And what he knows is that Georgia is a purple state. And while you still have a sort of red Republican-controlled legislature, Democrats were able to pick up some seats. And so he has seen what Governor Deal has done, and that there will be opportunities where you can work with Democrats. You know, we forget this a lot. But one of the things that Stacey Abrams did very early on when Governor Deal took office, and Brian reminded me of this, was that they figured out a way to work together on Hope Scholarship. Mm-hmm. They figured out a way to work on education.
Yep.
So now—
And she took some hits for that during her primary.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Brian. You know, which Republican is going to really step up and take on this issue of health care, metro health care issues, rural health care, hospitals closing, and more importantly, Medicaid expansion? Mm-hmm. You know, Stacey Abrams spent $45 million on her campaign. The majority of her message was all about Medicaid expansion. And so I will put a challenge out there to Democrats. Which Democrat is going to be that Stacey Abrams type Democrat back in 2010 that's going to step up to work with this governor? Because we are still healing. I mean, Democrats in this state, you know, I've gotten criticism for sort of saying that let's give this guy a chance. Let's give the governor-elect a chance. You know, I don't want him to fail because I want all Georgians to succeed. But I would be lying to you guys if I didn't tell you that when I'm at lunches and breakfasts and dinners with some of my Democratic friends, many of them people of color, they're still very outraged on the outcome. And so a Democrat or two on this House side and Senate side, who's going to be bold enough to step up to work up with this governor?
Our two possible nominees, Bob Trammell, the House Minority Leader now, succeeding Stacey Abrams on the Democratic side, and Speaker Ralston, who can probably afford to take those bullets.
Well, we haven't talked a lot about the Speaker. And, you know, I saw the Speaker. Brian and I was with him at an event where we both honored Charles Bullock, 50 years of being a UGA professor. And when I talked to
the political science guru of Georgia,
was my winner on the show. But, you know, what the Speaker basically said to me privately, and I think he wouldn't mind me saying this publicly, is that he understands that he's in a unique position. He is the returning Republican that is going to be put in a position to bring some stability to the legislature. We know that there's always a little friction between the Senate and the House. You got a new lieutenant governor in Jeff Duncan who looks like he sort of dodged a bullet from his powers being stripped away from him. So that was a big win with him. But keep an eye on, you know, Senator Butch Miller. But Speaker Ralston is really, to me, is going to be the rock for this upcoming session. He's going to be the one that can get legislators in the room to say, hey, look, let's work with this governor-elect. And he's picked some very good floor leaders. But I want to go back to the softer tone that we're hearing. I think that Brian Kemp, governor-elect Brian Kemp, was very smart to know, okay, the campaign is over, purple state, almost sort of a trending purple legislature. I better go out here right away and figure out what are the one or two issues that I can sort of compromise. But now I'm sure his advisors are telling him, but we can't, you know, abandon our base. We got to make sure that when it comes up to issues that our base are very, very concerned about, you're going to see a pivot probably back to them after he sort of continues to make some goodwill with Democrats across the aisle.
From his point of view, wouldn't the time for compromise, though, especially on something like Medicaid expansion, be now? Because he'll have the next 3 or 4 years to cater to the base and say to them, look, I did that, but I'll make this up to you before he runs for reelection.
I think it gets really tricky because, you know, we're going to talk about this, but we still have the Religious Freedom Restoration Act mm-hmm. out there. And so he's got to make a choice. You know, do I come in and sort of show that I want to work with the business community and Democrats around Medicaid expansion? I think Brian has did a really good job of explaining how this can be done in Georgia. I know he's worked a little bit on that. I'm going to take off my Democratic sort of strategist hat because I would immediately always point back, hey, they did it in Indiana. Mike Pence mm-hmm. did it there. But I think that
you're talking about Medicaid expansion.
Medicaid expansion. But, you know, I think we got to give Governor-elect Kemp a chance. The campaign is over. Now, when giving him a chance, we can't, you know, make sure that we don't put the pressure on to hold him accountable with some of the issues that he promised on the campaign.
And let me say one thing that has changed here is that Republican states across the country were waiting to see what the Trump administration and a Republican Congress would do on this topic. Even when we controlled all three, we were unable to rescind Obamacare and unable to rescind Medicaid expansion, which is what Republicans were waiting on. They didn't want to go out on a limb and then have to, like, crawl back from it and take benefits away from people, which is very difficult to do because your healthcare economy builds around Medicaid expansion. We didn't want to have to, like, stop after starting. Now we know it's not going away. And you're seeing more and more Republican states fall by the wayside and doing this. Now, granted, many of those out west are don't have the poverty population that we have. One particular challenge that we have is 800,000 or more Georgians would add to the rolls. That is significant, and that's something that we can't do lightly. We've got to think about a sustainable funding plan for that, and Republicans are right to question how we're going to do it.
But does it make sense, then, to have less of an awareness campaign for Obamacare enrollment at a time when, Brian, you're looking at more uninsured if they don't enroll, and on Brian Kemp's transition team is none other than Tom Price, who fought Obamacare for years when he was chair of the House Budget Committee and then as Health and Human Services Secretary.
You know, it's been interesting to see Tom Price in his post-official office role sort of speaking some truths about some of these yeah. things in a way that you didn't do when you're in office or a cabinet secretary. You know, one thing he has said, that you cannot have universal coverage and you can't have pre-existing conditions covered unless you have a universal mandate, which is what Barack Obama said forever ago. And I think even Republicans acknowledge that's the truth. They're just approaching it a little differently.
That was revolutionary. I cannot believe that Brian Robinson finally gave former President Barack Obama
and Tom Price did.
But you just echoed it. But the thing that's so interesting about that, Dennis, is what Brian just showed us is that Republicans have kind of known all along, but now it's crystallized that they had to do exactly what President Obama was saying. You cannot do what needs to be done without a universal health care mandate. But that's why I think that Governor-elect Kemp put former Secretary of Health and Human Services Tom Price and former Congressman on his transition committee, because I suspect that they're in a little room, they're in this little silo area, and they're using his expertise of having been on the federal level, having been a staunch opponent of Obamacare, which we know that's coming to a close, to really advise his governor-elect of some ideas of how he can really deal with it in Georgia.
Because there is no question of whether one is a supporter or opponent of Secretary Price. There's no question he knows the area.
He knows the stuff, absolutely.
I just really hope that he doesn't, you know, fly around in these same jets, and maybe now that he's a private citizen, you know, maybe he's on Delta again, because that's the way I used to see him all the time, in economy comfort, flying back and forth to Washington. So, Brian, let me know if you see the congressman out of PDK, because I know you hang out there a lot as well.
Yeah, but Delta's got a whole new boarding order thing going on, so we'll all have to figure that out.
That's true.
Theron, let me turn to you on something else that Brian Kemp did. He walked to City Hall to visit Mayor Bottoms, something that doesn't usually happen. Usually that trek is made by the mayor to the state capitol. And you were quoted in the paper about this. How did that happen?
I think it happened because, you know, during the campaign, you had Mayor Bottoms sort of fire back at then candidate for governor, Brian Kemp. And, you know, both of those individuals did not abandon what they believed in. I mean, I think what they both know is after going through grueling campaigns, I mean, we remember the campaign that Mayor Bottoms went through with Mary Norwood and the grueling campaign primary that Brian Kemp went through with Casey Cagle and then with Stacey Abrams. And so I think the both of them had a shared interest in saying, okay, if one extends the offer, which Governor-elect Kemp did to Mayor Bottoms, to meet and to figure out how we can govern together. And they both know that we have seen a model that works. Bryant's former boss and current Governor Deal had a good working relationship with former Mayor Kasim Reed. I want to go back a little further. Even back to Bill Campbell, when he was mayor, he had a good working relationship with then Governor Zell Miller. And so even Shirley Franklin had a working relationship with Roy Barnes. So I think that symbolically, Dennis, Governor-elect Kemp wanted to say, hey, here's my olive branch. I'm going to come to City Hall. I'm going to take those 300-plus steps, come to your office so everyone can see me, mm-hmm. and we're going to have a robust conversation. I think it was a big step for Mayor Bottoms because she also knows that there's going to be 2 to 3 big issues before the legislature, and her as mayor and this council have got to be able to work with the state to try to prevent certain issues from happening and also promoting issues as well. And so, again, I think that Governor-elect Kemp wanted to say, hey, all right, I'm not this guy that you guys saw during the campaign. I'm willing to work with her on economic development. I think Mayor Bottoms said, all right, I've seen this model work for the city. That doesn't mean that they're not going to disagree. But if he wants to meet with me, we want to really tackle some key issues, then let's have a meeting.
Really good move by both of them to do this because the dynamics have changed. The expectations of the electorate have changed. It used to be that you expected the governor, who is going to be a conservative, to be at odds with the liberal mayor of Atlanta, and it provides a good dichotomy for both of them to kind of play to their bases.
Well, today, yeah, it gives them both a foil.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody to blame or something goes wrong. And Reed and Deal change that dynamic, and now the expectation is that political differences don't matter. Your job is to work together and bring jobs, high-paying positions to metro Atlanta area, even beyond the city limits of Atlanta. You know, Mayor Reed, to his credit, did a great job of being a regional presence, a regional figurehead, even though his power didn't extend beyond those city limits. And Keisha has that opportunity here as well. I mean, this is really good for the mayor of Atlanta. It raises her profile and makes Brian Kemp look like somebody willing to reach out.
But one of the first issues that could threaten whatever fragile alliance they're able to put together is a bid for the state to take over Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Brian, yeah. Does the mayor extract a promise from the governor that that won't happen? It won't get past his desk? Or is this going to be an ongoing thing, especially with a study committee continuing to meet on this?
I don't think Brian Kemp is going to wade into that just yet unless there's some external force weighing down on him. I think he would rather the process play out and it not be his problem for now. I think he's got enough on his plate. Let that process and the legislature happen. The people who are pushing it are supporters of his, so that puts him in a bit of a dilemma. And on Keisha Lance Bottoms' side, it's not just the city of Atlanta that's opposed. You see a lot of people in the legislature, Republican and Democrat, who are opposed. I've heard Republicans say, why would we do this? It's working perfectly fine. And then you've got the state's largest employer, Delta Airlines, saying explicitly and openly that this will be a major, major disaster.
Well, I think it sent a strong signal to the legislators that, mm-hmm. hey, the governor and the mayor, or governor-elect and the mayor are meeting. They had to talk about that issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine they didn't talk about this.
This shows that this mayor, at a time when she just announced with now Governor Deal that Norfolk Southern is going to be putting their headquarters here, we're going to bring an additional 850 jobs to this city.
Some of them very high paying.
Very high paying jobs. And so that was kind of in the works with Governor Deal and with the Gulch Project and everything. And so this now gives her an opportunity to show that she can be a pro-business mayor. And I think that Governor-elect Kemp is going to be a pro-business governor as well.
Speaking of pro-business, let's go back to Speaker Ralston for a moment. He sent out a signal recently that said, I'm not in any hurry to take up religious freedom legislation again. Brian, is that good news in a way for Brian Kemp because he promised to sign a bill if it ever got to him, but one big obstacle in it getting to him would be Speaker Ralston?
Yeah, I don't know that Bryan ever promised to actively campaign for it, to make it part of his agenda, and to twist arms to get it passed.
No, so, he just said he'd sign it.
He just said he would
there.
Sign it. So he's got a lot of wiggle room there. And the speaker is in a very unique situation. He's lost a lot of suburban members in this last cycle. And we can't just have a rural strategy and maintain our majority. It will not work long term. And it may not even work in the short term. If you look at the number of House seats that Republicans won by 54% or less, it is a startling number, and it is enough to flip the House in 2 years should we lose all of those. So we have a political challenge ahead of us. So the Speaker very wisely is looking at this not just as policy, but also as politics. What is going to stem the bleeding and help us reclaim some of those voters who voted for Republicans for years, who voted for Johnny Isaacs and Nathan Deal, but then turned around and voted for Democrats up and down the ballot in 2018. He's got a target on those people because he wants to maintain the Republican majority. And Republicans who think that RFRA is a sword we need to die on need to seriously ask themselves, do we have a problem in Georgia? Are there people of faith who are being prosecuted and those prosecutions are winning in court? The answer is no. And we are going to lose jobs. We get no additional religious protections. And here's another thing I mentioned from time to time. Georgia is one of only four states that do not have civil rights protections. That means that if you are a person of faith and you want to discriminate against someone because their lifestyle violates your religious beliefs, you are perfectly free to discriminate today. We just don't advertise it.
Theron, even as the speaker was sending out those signals, the boss at Norfolk Southern, the city's newest corporate resident-to-be, dodged a question from our friend Thomas Wheatley at Atlanta Magazine, where he was asked to weigh in on it, and he basically said, we do railroads here.
I love that response.
It was a great response. I think maybe they had Bryan a retainer, and he probably wrote that in his talking points. But no, look, I thought that that was a good answer because you can't tell me that Norfolk Southern was not worried about what this governor would do in regards to RFRA.
So are you saying they would weigh in if they had to?
No, I think that they knew that privately the question came up because there's no way that Norfolk Southern was very involved in sort of the outcome of the Gulch deal. But here's the bottom line I want to make around RFRA and what the speaker did. Again, we just talked about stability. We talked about him being the rock. We talked about him being this voice of reason in the legislature. What Republicans were saying about a couple weeks ago, Dennis, is that, well, maybe we entertain a version of a religious freedom bill that looks a lot like the bill that Bill Clinton signed in 1993. Mm-hmm. And what I immediately said was is that if you just look at where the country was in 1993 and where we are now, and Bryan just did a good job of sort of giving you some of the challenges that comes along with that, we are a totally different country, you know, totally different issues and totally different circumstances. So I think that was a message point that was not going to work. But if you got the Speaker of the House saying, you know, we shouldn't be dealing with this right now, that then again gives Governor-elect Kemp a little cover to tell his very conservative base that Bryan just talked about, that some of them do want him to take on this issue, that we've got to put forth more important issues right now in this agenda. And then there's no way that RFRA is not going to come up. But I think now a business community who has been very outspoken against RFRA and make sure that it has no language in there that discriminates against anyone, I think now that was a good signal from the speaker to tell them, hey, guys, you got a little bit more time, but I still think it's going to come up in this legislative session.
Republicans need to ask themselves if RFRA is worth losing the majority. We've got to get through the next election, 2020, because that's when we go into reapportionment and can redraw the districts and maybe shore up some of these wavering districts that are trending blue. So we got to get to there. But again, we don't have a problem here in Georgia. People of faith are protected. They have the strongest protections possible. We have a solution in search of a problem. And lastly, one thing going in the speaker's favor and in his position's favor is the leading voices for this legislation, Senator Josh McCoon from Columbus and Representative Sam Teasley from Marietta, will be gone. Josh ran for Secretary of State and lost. Sam was defeated in his reelection bid. So I don't know yet. There's definitely people who would stand up and take their places, but the leading, most influential voices are gone.
And there is much more of the Political Breakfast coming right up. Stay right here.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
We are back. Happy to have you with us for the Political Breakfast. Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist, is back with us, along with Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist, our Political Breakfast regulars. One of the other big issues for the city and the new governor will be transportation. Atlanta just got ranked as having the most expensive lifetime commute by a site called educateddriver.com, as reported in the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Meanwhile, the new transportation board, the board for that new ATL authority, is meeting these days. Gwinnett's getting ready to vote on transit in the spring. Clayton is getting rapid rail thanks to a vote by the MARTA board. Theron is the governor-elect in a spot where he has to say, okay, we're going to have to continue to put serious money behind this. Again, a position that may not fly with his base.
Well, he's definitely going to have to not only put money behind it, but it's going to be ranked up there as far as the big issues that a lot of Georgians care about when it comes to economic development, jobs, education, healthcare. Transit is in that top three, top four, just depending on how you ask the question and who your pollster is. And so if you look at the progress that you just made in Clayton, now with the board vote of MARTA to basically continue the federal process to allow BRT and all this stuff to come available there. If you look at what's coming up in Gwinnett, now they're putting together a very good team of people to make sure that that referendum passes. And then if you also look at the ATL board, which there is some chatter about, you know,
that doesn't have much Atlanta representation in it.
Well, it didn't. And that was something that kind of came out from some of the people. I mean, I'm only quoting chairman of the Fulton County Commissioner, Rob Pitts, who kind of put up a lot of publicity about how he was under the impression that he had an automatic seat at the table for the ATL Transit Authority or Transit Board, and he didn't. He ran unsuccessfully and lost. But the good news is that you do have Mayor Bottoms on there. You have the DeKalb County CEO, Michael Thurman, who's on the board as well. And so while
a very skilled negotiator, by the
way. Very skilled negotiator who a lot of moderates and Republicans respect and are willing to work with. And so I believe that this article and this report that you just referenced, Dennis, is how everyone feels now. I mean, it is to the point now with me, I would need to leave maybe 10 or 15 minutes to just go from downtown to Midtown a little early. Nowadays, just looking at the traffic, just even on the interstates and on the roads, it's just gotten insane.
That's awful.
And if you look at one of the things that I got to give shout out to MARTA, is that they passed the test for the SEC championship. I mean, there was a lot of people who wrote MARTA, so they were getting ready for the Super Bowl. But I just really encourage this governor.
Yeah, the MLS championship, too.
MLS championship, they got it. But it doesn't get a lot of press because it only gets press when it's something bad happens.
Yeah.
And so while I think MARTA is continuing to get their act together and moving in the right direction, they just got to continue to grow their partnership.
But, Brian, will this mean money?
Well, I'd kind of push back a little bit on the idea that there aren't many Atlantans are on the board. I mean, the chairman is Charlie Sutcliffe, who is an Atlantan.
Georgia Power executive.
You also have Metro Atlantans who are also going to be part of this. You have Teddy Russell from Gwinnett County on there, for example, just to name a few. So you have a diverse group. You have business leaders. You have political leaders. And you have people from all over the region. That's what we need there. And I think that they are going to be coming together with plans to move us forward because Theron's right. I mean, it has gotten to be where for 6-7 hours of the day, you just don't want to go anywhere in this city because that's a nightmare. And it's because, you know, under Governor Deal, we've done such a good job of creating jobs that people are going back and forth to work. So it's Republican governors that has created this problem because we've been so wildly successful at economic development.
But does this mean a Republican governor and a Republican legislature now say, ooh, this is awful. It's going to hurt us with job creation in the future, we need to continue to put money into it.
We've proven it. I mean, look at what you have. State Senator Brandon Beetz from Alpharetta has been one of the major leaders on this issue.
And it took him years and a lot of bullets to do it.
But his major opposition came from his Republican colleagues.
And I will say that on the House side, Representative Tanner, who is chairman of transportation, he was a major force behind it. And he's from Dawsonville. I mean, he doesn't even have a dog in the fight. You would think he may even get pushback in his constituency for being for Atlanta's mass transit, quote unquote. But he has stepped forward and actually has won many accolades for his leadership and his vision on that issue. So I give him credit. I think Republicans are obviously not going to be as big spending and big vision on this as Democrats would be if they were in power. But I think we may be more building a more sustainable and more logical system.
What we did not see, Dennis, and Brian just really did a really good job of spinning this, because you're right. When it came to actual votes and the request for fundings, Republicans and Democrats and the mayors and county commissioners, it wasn't just the governor, worked together to basically bring jobs to Georgia and really to promote the amount of spending with transit. But here's what they didn't do. They didn't campaign on it. You went through an entire constitution, all the constitutional officers. I didn't hear Casey Cagle and Brian Kemp out there talking a lot about Jeff
Duncan.
Well,
it wasn't that long ago that a SPLOST went down.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, I didn't hear them, you know, promoting it, right? So now, to your point, Dennis, is what Republicans have figured out. Work with Democrats, work with your pro-business Republicans like a Brandon Beach and Kevin Tanner in the legislature, but then go home to your rural areas and say, shh, like, we're not going to talk about that. And so now, to the point where the problem has become so big that I think that, you know, at a time when we got a president that's spending more money than any other president has in history, I think that Republicans can get some cover about spending more money to advance transit options in this city.
A couple of quick things as we wrap up here. Nick Ayers, probably the most influential Georgian right now, period, chief of staff to Vice President Pence, turned down President Trump's offer to become his chief of staff, and he is also leaving the vice president's office and coming home to Georgia. Brian, I'll start with you. You know Nick Ayers, a lot of us do. Is this just the dysfunction in the Trump White House, or is Nick Ayers playing a much longer game here?
Hold on, let me interrupt. I just got a tweet that President Donald Trump just tweeted out and said that Brian Robinson at Lawrence Tisdale is a candidate for the chief of staff job in the White House. That's how crazy it's getting. Yeah.
What would be crazy about that? I would be a highly qualified candidate. I don't buy into he got out to escape the dysfunction. Nick went forward with a proposal to the president from news reports, and his proposal made a lot of sense to me. He wanted full hiring and firing authority because he didn't want to be in the same place as Reince Priebus, who had no control over the staff around him because none of them were owing to him or answerable to him. Nick wanted to be able to control that chaos and corral it and be able to be the one vessel going into the president, which John Kelly is trying to do to some
the
degree as well.
The gatekeeper is the title of the
gatekeeper
book goes.
And have actual power over that staff. So I think it's very reasonable. And Nick had no desire to stay there for two more years. He's been there for 2 years already. He built his wife's dream home. He and his wife built their dream home here in Atlanta. And he said to me once, imagine building the house that your wife has always dreamed of in the state that is her home and where she wants to be, and then telling her you can't be there. And that's the place he's been for 2 years. Jamie's ready to come home. They have triplets. They want to raise here in Georgia. And look, Nick is going to be a very successful businessman once again. He's made a lot of money in the private sector, and he's going to go back to that. Not that he needs the money. Obviously, we all know he's worth between $12 and $50 million. So he can kind of do whatever he wants, frankly. And he's still going to be involved with the president as the head of his super PAC.
His wife is a member, though, of the Perdue clan. And Theron, I have a theory about this. With David Perdue seeking to get re-election in 2020 and facing possible headwinds there, is Nick Ayers coming back to get set and really ramp up the Perdue re-election campaign, David Perdue re-election campaign, and perhaps his longer-range ambitions? I mean, David Perdue has been mentioned as a possible White House candidate down the road.
That's exactly right, Dennis. Listen, obviously Brian knows Nick Ayers better than I do. I think I maybe met him a couple times. But I remember reading about this young guy when Sonny Perdue was running for governor. And so we've been hearing the name of Nick
Ayers.
Yeah,
I covered him then.
Yeah, and so he's basically doing what I would do and what Brian would do. He's cashing out. He's coming home, and he's basically saying, I'm going to turn down the most prestigious, you know, small club of people, more so probably the only thing that's higher than being in the fraternity of chiefs of staffs is to be the fraternity of presidents, right? so to say I'm going to turn down this very powerful job that Brian or I mean, look, if Donald Trump called me today and said, hey, will you come to Washington to be my chief of staff? This is probably going to shock a lot of my friends. I would do it because here's the thing, right,
Dennis? God, I would love to see that.
No, and now I would.
Sell tickets.
I would ask Nick Ayers to send me a copy of that memo that he sent the president, and I would probably, you know, have those same
rules. Cut and paste that.
But this is what's so interesting, and I've been saying this on this podcast for a very long time. We have an unhinged president. He is so unhinged. He's so out of control that a young man in Nick Ayers, who we know is probably the most connected person in Georgia, and probably one of the most non-elected, most powerful Republicans, people in Georgia, for him to say, no, I'm not going to even do it for 6 months. I'm not going to even do it for a year, but no, I'm going to come home. So, yes, look, David Perdue watched very closely and saw the gains that Stacey Abrams made during her campaign. I know Senator Perdue. I know that his staff, Dickey and all those guys, are saying,
Derek Dickey, longtime aide to Governor Perdue, Sonny Perdue.
Yeah, now I do know Dickey. Now, I don't know Nick Ayers, but I do know Dickey. You know, Paul Beneke over at RGA. Yeah. Those guys, and Brian knows this, they now see an opening because, and Brian's not going to like when I say this, the Gainesville crowd, them boys are gone. Now, Athens is on the map, right? Now, Athens is the center
because of Brian Kemp.
And so the Perdues, who we knew, had a lot to do with not just President Trump sending out the tweet to endorse.
Oh, they really boosted Brian Kemp.
Well, they told the president, hey, we don't know about this Cagle guy. I mean, he's real pro-business. We don't know if he can get there. But let's give Brian a little boost, and let's see if he'll play ball on the business end. So, hey, Nick.
Brian Kemp, you mean.
Nick, hey, come on home, brother. You know, if you want to play some golf, you know, maybe Brian will let us come over his house in Brookhaven. You know, I'm a member of one little small little country club here. We can have a drink. You know, I believe in true bipartisanship, you know, pro-business opportunities. But he's coming to cash out. He's setting up shop. And we're going to see this young man, and I think in the next 2 to 4 years, go back on a larger scale once Donald Trump is not president anymore to basically try to lead the Republicans in their efforts.
So, Brian, the answer to the original question is everybody here thinks Nick Ayers is playing a very long game.
This is a national figure today. A national figure. And in that tweet that went around the world, I mean, this was immediately in the New York Times and in the Washington Post and all over the country, maybe all over the universe for that matter. And he had hashtag Georgia. It tells you where his heart is. It tells you where his focus is. And I could see him running for governor, although that's going to be 6 years off, 8 years off. Or I could see him running for U.S. Senate when one of those two comes open.
Or if Johnny Isaacson, who Brian and I and you as well, Dennis, have tremendous respect for, we think he's, you know, a tremendous U.S. senator. If he decides to not pursue reelection or if he decides to step down, Nick Ayers is the leading candidate to take that position. Or here's another conspiracy theory. We know that right now, where Cohen has just gotten 3 years in prison, and we know that Donald Trump's approval ratings is just sinking as quickly as the water goes down in Atlanta.
Which y'all have been saying over and over for 2 years now.
I mean, the investigation is getting closer and closer to Trump. If David Perdue decides to run for president, which is not out of the question.
It's not impossible.
You know, we'll see that jean jacket again in those cotton fields in South Georgia. If he runs for president, then I guarantee you that I think you'll see a Nick Ayers maybe even be interested in, I guess, being appointed or running for that seat. So this young man is coming back to not only cash out, but to actually
keep
his powder dry for a possible political elected career.
Yeah, he would be. And I'd say if he did run in 2022, should Senator Isaacson choose not to seek reelection, and I don't want to forecast that. I would hate to lose him. He's one of my all-time favorites. You got to think that Attorney General Chris Carr, who was Isaacson's former chief of staff, would also have an eye on that. And you want to talk about deal Isaacson world versus Perdue world in this clash of titans. And, of course, it's really awkward for me because I'm friends with both. My wife comes from Perdue world. I come from deal world. I'm very close to Chris
Carr. White privilege. White privilege. You have it all the way, y'all. Yeah. You know, you have it all three ways.
Yeah, and nobody who's white these days can win a Democratic primary. So I think that we're probably pretty even there.
It leaves us a lot to think about, doesn't it? We cannot end though without looking at the wildly impossible that came true. If you had told me even a couple of years ago that a suddenly wildly popular soccer team would end Atlanta's long championship drought, I, as a soccer fan for 45 years, would have told you you were crazy. But Atlanta United did it. There are going to be big changes in the team for next year. Defending will be difficult. But, Theron, what does this mean for the city, including to people who don't care at all about soccer?
This was very transformational. Listen, I got to admit, you know, I never thought that when Arthur Blank had this vision to bring a MLS team to Atlanta and port a cab who missed out on a tremendous opportunity to put the
practice facility. They could have had that
practice
facility.
And I want to be clear, because I know CEO Thurman listens to this podcast. That happened under former CEO May. But, you know, I want to just quote what Mayor Bottom said. As a person like her who, again, I've been to soccer matches in Europe. You know, Brian likes to talk about how I gallivant all around the country.
You did see my tweet. I used the verb
gallivant. I didn't respond to it because I don't believe in giving you free publicity, you know, when it's about me. But if you just look at the parade and if you look at the people at the games, I mean, people are standing for hours, Dennis. And people like you who've been soccer fans for so long at a time when
I never dreamt this.
So listen, big shout out to Arthur Blank. Big shout out to all the entire staff and all the players, and more importantly, for this city who needed a win. I mean, I am still not over the Falcons losing the Super Bowl.
Well, Arthur Blank had a great day when he watched Atlanta United win the MLS, but then a couple of days later, he had to watch the Falcons.
Yeah, the next day.
And DQ and all those guys. And I mean, you know, I've already made Kirby Smart my loser for that bogus 4th-and-11 fake punt call. I'm getting very close, Brian, and I know you're on the World Congress Center Authority, so I want to go to some more games, but DQ is on my list. If we don't start changing this organization around, he may be my loser here pretty soon.
Well, we know about the psychological effect of Atlanta United. Brian, long term for the city, for the state, what does this team mean in a way that no one could have anticipated a couple of years ago?
Well, I was having a conversation with the Falcons president, Rich McKay, who obviously is high up in the Blank organization.
Name drop, white privilege.
Rich McKay, whose family, of course, is very famous in the civil rights movement. I said to him, when y'all brought United here, I thought this was the biggest, dumbest boondoggle in the world. I mean, Southerners don't care about it. I thought, who cares about it? Latin Americans, they love it. I mean, is that what's going to be? The Latin immigrants are going to be the ones who fill up a 70,000-seat stadium? Good luck. This is ridiculous. And boy, did I miss the boat. I mean, the energy there for the championship game was electric. It was as electric as the SEC championship game was there the week before. So how does it change the South and the city? The week before, we had the sport that we all think we care the most about, college football. And it was packed to the rafters.
Yeah, and this is still a college football town, let's say.
Absolutely.
Face it.
But 6 days later, I'm sorry, 7 days later, you had just as many people with just as much energy cheering on that crowd. They have embraced this team. They have embraced these players. You know, here I am. I'm not even a soccer fan. I ran into Miguel Alvaron.
Yeah, I saw your picture on social media.
Yeah. Another name drop for you. Not white, Latino privilege.
Okay.
And I was like, just sort of starstruck by this dude who can't even speak English, you know? And I'm asking him, sitting there in a valley, asking him to get a picture. So if that's what I'm doing, imagine what people who grew up as soccer fans, maybe a few years behind me, what they're doing now. And a lot of these folks that I see, they are much younger. And this shows that Blank's got a market that's going to be strong for 60 years here.
The economic implications of this are only just now being felt.
He's so smart.
I want to quote Chairman Jason Estevez, who put out I think the tagline or the sentence of the year.
Atlanta Public Schools Chairman.
Yeah, it was Atlanta Public Schools Chairman. He said, it took a whole bunch of immigrants to bring Georgia a championship. And so that's, to me, if you look at this team, they are a team of immigrants, right? People who some can't speak English fluently. Mm-hmm. And so to have those players come here and make that impact on Georgia, when we know immigration and illegal immigration is a big topic in our country, but I think that Chairman Estevez really sort of captured that sports has this unique way of bringing everyone together. I mean, you saw Democrats, Republicans, old, young. You saw LGBTQ, you saw suburbanites, you saw in-town people coming together to rally behind this team. And I just think that Arthur Blank has really sparked this unity in the city. And I just hope that we continue to carry on that unity. And hopefully our Falcons and our Hawks and our Braves will get their acts together as well.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist and public affairs consultant and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign. Thanks to you both, guys, and happy holidays.
Thanks to everybody who supports this podcast and supports the station. And at the risk of offending Theron's liberal sensibilities, Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays, everyone.
And don't forget, after the holidays, we will be in Marietta the evening of Wednesday, January 9th, for a special edition of the Political Breakfast, a preview of the coming legislative session. We'll have a live audience there. We would love to have you be a part of it, and you can find out how to get tickets by visiting our website, wabe.org/community. And if you like this show, subscribe, please. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That is a great way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us, and happy holidays to everybody.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.